Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, June 23rd, 2022. Deadline approaches for letters of interest to fill vacant city council member seat. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. The city of Marfa is accepting letters of interest from community members wishing to serve on city council until this Tuesday, June 28th. As of press time, city employees reported they had not yet received any letters of interest. Letters of interest should include information as to why the applicant would like to be a city council member, why they think they would be a good fit for the role, and any relevant background information. Letters are to be delivered in person or mailed to City Hall by 4 p.m. June 28th. City Council will review letters of interest at the regular June 30th council meeting and will likely vote to appoint a new council member that evening. Because the incoming council person will be appointed by council, they will serve a one-year rather than a standard two-year term, and will have to go up for re-election in May 2023, should they wish to stay on council. In order to be eligible to run for city council, applicants must be a U.S. citizen and must be 18 years of age or older. Applicants must have resided within the state of Texas for at least 12 months and must have resided within the city of Marfa for at least 6 months, and continue to hold residence within Marfa city limits. Viable candidates cannot have been declared mentally incapacitated without the right to vote and cannot have been convicted of a felony. Last month's May 7th general election would typically see citizens voting on new council members, but due to a lack of candidates applying for the open positions, the election was canceled. The current city council, made up of Mayor Manny Baiza, Mayor Pro Tem Irma Salgado, and council members Raul Lara, Eddie Payares, and newly appointed Mark Cash, is seeking a final council member to fill the last remaining vacant seat. Council opted to solicit letters of interest in lieu of holding a special election and stated they would like to have the new council member in place before the budgeting process begins later this summer. Marfa's City Council creates policy for the town, approves the final city budget, and assists in setting the vision and course for the city's future through strategic planning. City Council also appoints local residents as members to Marfa's boards and commission and advisory committees. City Council meetings are typically held twice monthly. For additional information, contact City Hall at 432-729-4315. John Lira, Democratic candidate for Texas House of Representatives District 23, visits Big Bend region on Boots on the Ground Tour. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. Residents of the Big Bend region turned out to meet and show support for Democrat John Lira, candidate for Texas House Representatives District 23, last week at gatherings in Fort Davis, Marfa, and Alpine. Lira, who is running against Republican incumbent Congressman Tony Gonzalez, is visiting all 29 counties that make up Texas' 23rd district this summer and fall ahead of the November election to spread the word about his campaign and meet constituents. Marfa's meet-and-greet hosts were Hillary Scruggs Beebe and David Beebe, Democratic candidate for County Commissioner Precinct 4, who welcomed citizens and Lyra at their home. Miniature Texas and American flags were staked into the soil lining the entrance to the Beebe's home, where a few dozen attendees, mostly Presidio County residents, snacked on tea sandwiches, cold beet soup, and ice cream sandwiches. As David Beebe introduced Lyra, attendees fanned out onto the front porch and lawn to hear an informal speech from the candidate, clutching cups of water and iced tea to beat the heat. John Lyra needs your vote to unseat the incumbent. Unseating incumbents is very difficult, said Beebe. Incumbents, whatever party, have been here too long. We need some new leadership. After requesting support for his own campaign for county commissioner, Beebe took a moment to shout out another Democratic candidate in the audience, Jose Portillo Jr., who is running against Cinderella Guevara in the Presidio County judge race in this November's general election. Lyra, wearing a Marine's cap, suit jacket, and jeans, took the floor to claps from the audience and started off by introducing his campaign to unseat incumbent Congressman Gonzalez, which he said was gaining momentum. I believe this district can absolutely flip. With your vote, with your help, and with the help of folks in Fort Davis and Alpine, said Lyra, we can finally win back this seat. Lyra discussed his qualifications, which varied from serving in the Marine Corps for over 11 years to earning a master's in public policy from Carnegie Mellon, to working for government agencies such as AmeriCorps and the U.S. Small Business Administration for the Office of Veterans Business Development. Recently, Lyra worked in the office of California Congressman Jimmy Panetta to introduce legislation he helped author while serving with the National Commission on Military National Public Service called the Inspire to Serve Act. The government has not only trusted me to go overseas and fight as a soldier, as a Marine, but it also trusted me to manage national programs and write national legislation, said Lyra. Because Texas' 23rd Congressional District is so expansive, including San Antonio, the seventh largest city in the U.S., many miles along the U.S.-Mexico border, bilateral trade ports, oil fields of the Permian Basin, as well as aerospace company Blue Origin near Van Horn, and a potential rare earth mine in Sierra Blanca, the district is facing broad challenges, said Lyra. What happens here is going to have serious implications, not only to you and I, but for our fellow Texans, for our nation, and actually has a global impact. We need somebody in this seat that takes his job seriously, said Lyra. Next, Lyra expounded on how the national spotlight was recently shown on the district and, more specifically, Congressman Gonzalez in the wake of the mass shooting at Robb Elementary in Uvalde in late May. Lyra noted that Uvalde, or Uvalde, which had a campus officer and a local police force, wasn't even one of the district's most vulnerable areas in regards to school security. New evidence, including law enforcement transcripts and school security footage, revealed a 46-minute delay from the time officers entered the school to the time they broke into the classroom where the gunman was holed up. Investigations into law enforcement's response are ongoing. Lyra, who supports bipartisan gun safety reform, including prohibiting the sale of some semi-automatic firearms to people under 21, criticized Gonzalez's continuing opposition to gun control measures, including his decision to vote no on the enhanced background checks and Bipartisan Background Checks Acts of 2021. The tragedy in Uvalde has brought national negative attention to Congressman Tony Gonzalez, who refuses to answer basic questions on national media interviews and votes no against the Protecting Our Kids Act, and has doubled down on the NRA line to not support any bipartisan gun safety measures, said Lira. When reached for comment, Congressman Gonzalez defended his opposition to the Protecting Our Kids Act, arguing it did not address the root causes of shootings. I voted no on legislation that fails to meaningfully prevent widespread gun violence or ensure the safety of our kids in schools, said Congressman Gonzalez. This purely partisan messaging package focuses on unrelated provisions, such as restrictions on gun storage, that don't address the underlying issues behind the Uvalde shooting. My constituents want real solutions, like access to mental health services and improved school safety. That's why I am laser-focused on having serious, bipartisan discussions around legislation that will address the root causes of violent and heinous crimes, added Congressman Gonzalez. At his meet-and-greet in Marfa, Lira stated he himself is a gun owner and understands the culture around ownership of firearms is strong in the state, but that serious reform is required. I don't think that AR-15s and the weapons that I use in war against my enemies belong in our communities, especially in the hands of 18-year-olds, said Lira. But that doesn't mean that we can't stand up for our families, that we can't stand up for our teachers, our schools, we can't stand up for our places of worship and protect them. Acting as a community partner and advocate and working to bring additional resources to the district are key roles in serving as a Texas representative, said Lira. Unlike his opponent, he said, he would have voted for the American Rescue Plan, John Lewis Voting Rights Act, and bipartisan infrastructure bill, which would have brought jobs to Texas. Is this the type of representation that we want? Is this the voice that is representing us right now, accurately, in Washington, D.C.? I think not. I think we could do better, said Lira. Lira wrapped up his speech with a request for support, asking those gathered to spread the word about his campaign on social media, donate, and volunteer. He stayed to take questions from Presidio County voters and posed for photos. Attendees filtered out, some toting newly acquired Lira for Congress yard signs. Lira is set to return to the Big Bend region in September. Gonzalez's office did not provide information regarding whether or not the congressman would be visiting the Tri-County area or hosting virtual town halls in the lead-up to the November election. Photos courtesy of Lira for Congress. Presidio County Democratic Chair Nicole Swartz and John Lira. Hillary Scruggs Beebe, John Lira, and David Beebe. Presidio Bridge construction could start as early as July 5th. By Sam Karras, Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Presidio. There was cause for celebration at Tuesday's Presidio County Commissioners Court meeting. Construction on the International Bridge is expected to start again in a few weeks. The project has been delayed for years as a memorandum of understanding, MOU, between the two countries, languished on Governor Abbott's desk. Jake Giesbrecht, executive director of the Presidio International Port Authority, PIPA, expected boots on the ground by July 5th. Giesbrecht, who also owns a trucking company that serves both sides of the border, has attended a series of meetings between Mexican and American officials. That's sort of my role, a liaison between state and federal governments here and in Mexico, and then business people and the private sector, he explained. There are so many pieces of the puzzle, but you have to keep the communication lines open. The Presidio Bridge is unique in that half of it is owned and administered by the Texas Department of Transportation, TxDOT, and the other half is administered by CAPUFE, a Mexican agency that administers roads and bridges. No other international bridge in Texas is owned by the state. We're like their only child, Giesbrecht explained. It's a negative and a positive. Construction duties on the bridge were split between the two countries. Texas stopped construction in April 2020, while the Mexican agencies worked through the pandemic to finish their half. The stalled American construction has cinched the western half of the bridge into one lane, congesting customs lines and requiring agents on both sides to conduct traffic in addition to their regular duties. Presidio officials had been hoping the construction would be finished by the holidays. According to a TxDOT survey, bridge traffic at peak times like Dia de los Muertos and Christmas can back up several miles on U.S. 67. A spokesperson for TxDOT estimated in an email to Presidio's mayor, John Ferguson, that the construction itself would take 4 months to complete once reinitiated. Presidio County Precinct 1 Commissioner Eloy Aranda has been fielding complaints from constituents for years. My concern is that the bridge is 90% built. Why is the state holding up money to build the bridge? Despite having the inside scoop on all the behind-the-scenes political bargaining, Giesbrecht didn't have a simple answer to Aranda's question. Ultimately, Abbott is the governor, and this is his bridge. Governor Abbott's office did not return a request for comment. The bridge project is part of a larger push to increase trade between the Permian Basin, Chihuahua, and beyond. MOTRAN, the Midland-Odessa Transportation Alliance, has been a vocal supporter of bridge improvements. Our area is the most prolific oil and gas-producing area in the entire world, MOTRAN President James Beauchamp wrote in a letter to officials from the state of Chihuahua on June 7th. MOTRAN has a long history and connection to Chihuahua and Sinaloa. Connections to other economies provide tremendous economic opportunities. With a new rail bridge in the works just downstream from the motor vehicle bridge, the linked economies of Presidio and Ojinaga are primed for takeoff. The timeline for resumption of rail service between the two countries has yet to be determined, but could provide an avenue for job creation and increased trade. At Tuesday's meeting, Giesbrecht explained that the governor of Chihuahua, Mauro Campos, was excited about the bridge sparking another kind of economic development, tourism. She's really looking more at the tourism side and the trade side of the project, with Big Bend National Park. That's what she's always talked about, he explained. There's been a dream of connecting the Big Bend with Copper Canyon. The PIPA board is currently soliciting bids for a firm to help write a master plan for the Presidio Port of Entry, prioritizing projects that will take advantage of all the new opportunities expected in the wake of both bridge projects. County Judge Cinderella Guevara, who also sits on the PIPA board, floated the idea of more air commerce. I'd like to see the Presidio Airport actually used as an international airport, she said. Giesbrecht said that officials in Ojinaga had also expressed interest in building their own international airport and were hoping to kickstart beef exports from the Big Bend region to Chihuahua. The commissioners were tickled by his description of one mode of international cattle transport pitched by Grupo México. They're willing to design something like the electric walkway they have at airports. The cattle get on it and it starts moving, Gisbrecht said. The bridge update and all the possibilities for growth it entailed were a breath of fresh air for the commissioners. We just wanted to hear all the good news, said Commissioner Brenda Bentley.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, June 23rd, 2022. FSISD looks into safety measures by Nathan Hewer. The Fort Stockton ISD is looking into making their campuses safer for students in the immediate future. The Fort Stockton School Board decided to move forward with soliciting vendors for ballistic film to cover windows at all campuses, door sensors and cameras at each entrance, and additional fencing at Apache Elementary at their special meeting on June 8th. The ISD Superintendent Gabriel Samora explained that the action was an initial step into making all campuses safer, and that additional decisions regarding campus safety will be made before school starts, including the number of school resource officers the district employs, and potentially implementing a guardian plan. One of the first things we would do is improve the security of all our campuses. What we're talking about here is some of the obvious flaws. The superintendent said that while additional fencing at Apache may not protect the students from certain threats, the addition could prevent an abduction or a student accidentally attempting to leave school grounds. The playgrounds at Apache are not completely fenced in. We're talking about making those playgrounds secure, so if someone tried to pick them up without approval, it could prevent them from doing so. As for the safety inside of campuses, ballistic film is being considered as a measure to buy time for law enforcement if an intruder attempts to enter the building. We have to look at our glass windows and entrances that we have throughout the district. I have a number of square footage for all five campuses for ballistic film with the heavy-duty caulking, so that if somebody tries to kick it in or break it with an axe or some kind of sledge, they can't just walk in. While it's not bulletproof, it is a very small .22 caliber type resistant only. It will prevent the glass from shattering all over the place. According to numerous ballistic film vendors, the added layer of protection would slow down an active shooter and allow emergency response teams more time to arrive at the scene and defuse the situation. Demonstrations have shown that ballistic film slows active shooters down by more than 90 seconds. Zamora stated that the district received a quote of approximately $170,000 to have ballistic film placed on all windows. Coinciding with the added security of ballistic film is the monitoring of entrances at all campuses. We're looking at implementing camera systems and digital sensors that will alert administrators that there's a door that has been opened. We have to change some of the procedures, especially at our high school. Some of our kids like to put pencils between doors so that they can go through the gym in the back and let their friend in if they are late. We have to put a stop to that and end that procedure. The Fort Stockton ISD proceeded to have discussions regarding the number of school resource officers, guardian plan, and other safety measures the district needs to have in place at the start of the school year. I would like to see all entities and concerned citizens have input on how we can do this, Member Andy Rivera said. I think there is something that needs to be done, and there shouldn't be a cap or price limit for SROs or certified people. Board President Billy Espino concurred with Rivera's motion, believing all entities need to work on finding a unanimous resolution. All the entities are in it together, and we need to find a way to finance this as well. I'm all for SRO officers, but I think we need to strongly consider the guardian plan as well. Board member Sandra Rivera addressed her concerns with the lack of presence at campuses by SROs last school year and says that if the district decides to have more for the upcoming year, that needs to be addressed. The concerns that have been expressed to me and I have seen for the SROs is that I only saw them at most a handful of times for the whole year at one of the schools. Where were they? That was a concern that they're not visible. Board member Flo Garcia stated his desire for a comprehensive plan that covers school safety in every aspect. We need to get together and figure something out, not just one plan, a big plan. Not only SROs, but guardians. Find teachers that are willing to be equipped and decide to what extent. Then train them. Everything together is going to be the best possible plan. The district's next school board meeting is scheduled for Thursday, June 30. This is a developing story. See future editions regarding school safety. Senior Citizens Center hosts Hot Dog Supper. On Friday, July 1st, the Pecos County Senior Citizens Center will host its annual July 4th Hot Dog Supper at 6 p.m. The center will provide hot dogs and all the fixings. Participants are asked to bring side dishes for a potluck. After the meal, there will be a sing-along of patriotic songs and old favorites. The hot dog supper is open to all members of the Senior Center, but any Pecos County resident 50 years of age or older may join for only $5 a year. Bring your favorite side dish and join them for a true old-fashioned 4th of July celebration. And wear your USA or patriotic clothing. The Pecos County Senior Citizen Center is located on West 14th Street. For more information, call 432-336-2302. Pharmacist calls it a career after 30 years of ownership, by Nathan Heuer. Coming from a family of pharmacists, longtime Fort Stockton resident Mario Juarez knew the career path he wanted to go down since he was a teenager. The El Paso native began his career in pharmacy as a clerk at the age of 16. Juarez received his degree in pharmacy from the UT in 1984 and 8 years later began to live out his dream. I had an uncle that was my mentor. He was a pharmacist. I had a great uncle that was a pharmacist and a cousin as well. They were all positive influences on me. He took ownership of Bagot Pharmacy in Fort Stockton in 1992 and ran the business ever since. Last Tuesday, the West Texas native officially decided to sell Bagot Pharmacy and retire from his duties. I was able to live my dream. I was fortunate and blessed, he said. I think you get to a point when there are other priorities, obviously my family. He thanked his longtime certified pharmacy technician Chris Beza and office manager Laura Ramos for playing a large role in helping Bagot Pharmacy succeed over the years. They were my foundation. Juarez will continue his president duties at City Drug Pharmacy in Alpine and provide aid to area pharmacists if needed. Bagot Pharmacy is now owned by Shawat Patel, who started Fort Stockton Pharmacy in 2014 and has been owner of the business since. I had ambition to be a multi-store owner and provide good service to the community. It's perfect timing because I stayed in touch with Mario. Patel officially became the owner on June 14th, and the East Texas native said that he plans to continue to provide exceptional service. During this transition, I respectfully ask our customers to be patient. Customers are our number one priority, and we will do our best to bring the same dependable service as they've always received. Patel added that he plans to keep Stockton Pharmacy and Bagot Pharmacy separate businesses moving forward. Local man charged with sexual assault, by Nathan Heuer. Fort Stockton man was arrested in the city on Sunday morning and charged with aggravated sexual assault, along with three other additional charges. Jesus Alfredo Gonzalez, 29, was arrested shortly after 6 a.m. on June 19th and booked into the county jail on charges for assault, family house member, impeded breathing, interference with emergency telephone, unlawful restraint, and aggravated sexual assault. According to Fort Stockton Police Chief Robert Lujan, Gonzalez kicked in the front door of his wife's house and proceeded to assault her. The victim then waited until her husband fell asleep before leaving the residence and calling law enforcement. He busted down the door and then he attacked his wife. She waited till he went to sleep and then she called the police, Lujan said. The victim was transported to the hospital and received medical treatment before being released. Gonzalez received $50,000 bonds for both assault charges and $20,000 bonds for the interference and unlawful restraint. Gonzalez posted bond and was released the same day. The investigating officer stated that the investigation is ongoing, and once complete, the case will go to the 83rd District Attorney's Office. Aggravated sexual assault is a first-degree felony, which has a minimum sentence of 5 years in prison if Gonzalez is found guilty. In addition to imprisonment, an individual adjudged guilty with a felony of the first degree may be punished by a fine not to exceed $10,000. FSPD cracking down on graffiti. Fort Stockton Police Department is combating the recent spike in vandalism across town this past week. According to Police Chief Robert Lujan, the police department has identified the individual who has been tagging walls, dumpsters, stop signs, and more. The person being charged in connection with the vandalism was not able to be identified by the police department due to the individual being a minor. Lujan confirmed that the minor being charged with multiple offenses has been arrested previously. With the chances of copycats and others participating in the vandalism as a crew, the police department has further extended its investigations to trace all vandalism to its source. To report vandalism or criminal mischief, call 432-336-4600. Fort Stockton residents involved in fatal crash. One Fort Stockton resident was killed and another seriously injured after a rollover accident that occurred 30 miles south of Fort Stockton on Highway 385. The accident occurred on June 14th at 10 o'clock a.m. Driver Celeste Pamela Adrianza Calderon was pronounced dead at the scene by Justice of the Peace Salinas. Passenger Noella Pamela Adrianzen, 17, is in serious condition at Medical Center Hospital in Odessa. The crash report stated that Adrianzen was wearing a seatbelt and Calderson was not. Preliminary investigation revealed that the 2015 Chevrolet Suburban involved in the accident was traveling northbound on Highway 385 in a 75-mile-per-hour zone when the driver failed to navigate a slight curve in the roadway. The vehicle veered off the east side of the roadway, overcorrected, and rolled. The crash report was released by the DPS on June 20th.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, June 16th. A multi-facility park is coming to town. The story was written by Jan Cranfill. Ward County Event Center Park, Monahans' newest park, is being constructed just to the north side of the Ward County Event Center and across the street from Parkway Elementary. The park was part of the original event center plan from the beginning, County Judge Greg Holly said. The development of the East Side project was a joint effort by Ward County, Monahans Economic Development Corporation, and the city, with the county paying 45%, MEDC covering 45%, and the city covering 10% of the infrastructure cost, such as sewer and water lines, electric lines. Quote, the event center, Parkway Elementary, and the new park were all part of the original plan, Ward County Judge Greg Holly said. A few months ago, KDC Associates was hired as the architectural firm to start the planning of the park. Quote, a committee was formed to meet with them because we had a number of things that we wanted in the layout, Holly said. The entire park will cover 4 acres. One section of the park will have a grassy area of over an acre, which is where the summer movies will be held, and another smaller grassy area will be somewhat over 1/4 acre where soccer goals could be placed, he said. Quote, the main focal point of the park is a water splash pad for children to play in that will have colored water, colored by lights, shooting up at night, Holly said. There will be the splash pad, a sand volleyball area, a basketball court, covered tables, a fenced dog park, an artificial grass putting green, approximately 1 mile of walking sidewalks, some as wide as 8 feet, he said. There will be 4 spread-out electrical stations on the side closest to the event center, where vendors will have electricity available, and that street can be closed off for events that support the vendor setups. Night lighting will make walking after dark an option for those who prefer waiting until the sun goes down to go out for exercise. KDC associates were aiming for an end-of-the-year completion date, but their representative, Kelly Cook, addressed the court about the supply problems many contractors are facing today that could possibly cause delays. He also asked for the county's help hauling in dirt for them to be dumped and roughly smoothed in preparation for them to do the finish work. Quote, I think a more realistic date will be spring of 2023, maybe March, Holly said. Future plans include a boys and girls club to be built in the same area. In other action, a burn ban is still in place in the county due to the extreme drought and excessively high temperatures. Quote, residents can still burn household trash in a burn barrel with a grate cover. Any other type of controlled burning has to be approved by the fire chief, Randy Crabtree, Holly said. A fireworks ban is also in place for the upcoming July 4th celebration. The city will provide its annual fireworks display at the Million Barrel at dusk on Monday the 4th. Precinct 1 Commissioner Tino Sanchez, Precinct 2 Commissioner Larry Hanna, Precinct 3 Commissioner Dexter Nichols, and Judge Greg Holly were present for the meeting, while Precinct 4 Commissioner Eddie Nelms was absent. The next Ward County Commissioners meeting will be on June 27th at 9:30 a.m. at the Ward County Courthouse, 400 South Allen Street. Hill indicted on felony burglary, 2 theft charges. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. The Ward County Grand Jury of the 143rd Judicial Court handed down 3 felony indictments on January 3rd and May 5th for Kevin Lee Hill, age 44, of 600 South Calvin Street, for stealing copper wire, a TV, and many oilfield tools. The indictments state on or about August 17, 2020, Hill entered a building owned by Chevron and took a Samsung television and spools of wire valued at approximately $45,000 without the consent of Chevron. At the time of the offense, Ward County Sheriff Ferran Valle said, quote, in the morning hours of Monday, August 17th, deputies conducted an investigation in reference to possible wire theft in the 600 block of South Calvin Street. Multiple spools of electrical copper wire were seized pending further investigation. Later in the day, a call for service was received in reference to theft and burglary of a building at a Chevron lease west of Piote on FM 2355. The spools of electrical wire deputies previously seized were positively identified by Chevron. A search warrant was executed at the residence, which led to the recovery of other reported stolen items. End quote. The last indictment states on or about March 19, 2020, Hill stole 2 fuel pumps, poly machine, pipe wrench, air jack, tally tape, groover, 2 sledgehammers, Rotella oil, 2 boxes of diamond chain, control arm for groover, microwave, 2 air conditioners, set of pipe thread, jumper cables, grinder, 8 electrical plugs, bullet plugs, groover controller, Ingersoll Rand air compressor, threader and drill line cutter, drill line motor, bearings, drill line cutter, pipe cutters, crescent wrench, saw saw, fusion equipment, all totaling over $30,000, less than $150,000. Due to previous theft charges, Hill's theft charge was enhanced from a third-degree felony charge to a second-degree felony. the offenses can be punishable by imprisonment in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice for any term of not more than 20 years or less than 2 years, and a fine not to exceed $10,000. Tuxhorn, Reyes, sworn in as trustee members. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. Newly elected board member Steve Tuxhorn, District 4, took the oath of office to become the newest member of the Monahans Wicked Pyote ISD School Board of Trustees Monday night. Raymond Reyes, District 2, also took his oath of office as a re-elected trustee. Both men signed the officer statement, and the oath of office was administered by Notary Public Gay Fisher. The MWP ISD Board of Trustees held the election of officers, voting in Raymond Reyes as president for another term. Vice president will be Donna Garcia, and Nancy Upchurch will serve another term as secretary. Alternate secretary is Steve Fine. Band and choir students who had advanced past district and UIL competition were recognized by the board. Solo and ensemble groups captured several first-place gold medals. There was not a representative present from the architect firm, but Superintendent Chad Smith gave a brief update on the progress of the bond construction. Quote, "The west wing of the elementary is probably 99.9% ready for moving into in August," Smith said. The 5th and 6th grade sections could possibly be ready to move into in August also, he said. Some parts of the high school will be ready this summer before school starts next August. Quote, "The auditorium is fantastic. It has a better sound system than Wagner Noel does," Reyes said. School enrollment was up for the 2021-2022 year, with 73 more students enrolled. To accommodate the Ward County Stock Show, the board moved a teacher comp day in January. Apparently, the school calendar for the 2022-2023 school year was set before the Ward County Stock Show set its stock show date, which was set for January 20, 2023. The school calendar usually schedules a teacher comp day on the Friday of the stock show to allow a day for students to participate in the competition without penalty for missing school. Originally scheduled for January 27th, the comp day was approved to be moved to January 20th. The rental of school facilities was discussed, and the board agreed to raise prices. Outside organizations who have rented the high school auditorium in the past paid $200. By moving forward, the price will be $750. The junior high auditorium was $150 and is now $500. The baseball field was $200 and is now $350. Football field rates were also changed. Estes Memorial went from $350 to $500, and Thomas Bell Field from $100 to $200. The gymnasiums at the community complex went from $350 to $500, the high school from $200 to $500, the junior high $150 to $350, and Parkway Elementary from $150 to $350. The Monahans Education Center was $75 and did not change. The softball field was $200 and is now $350. The board voted to approve the interlocal agreement for cooperative purchasing. Cooperative purchasing allows several schools to form a cooperative, buy a discount, and share through distribution. The July board meeting date change was also approved, changing the meeting day from July 18th to July 25th. The next regularly scheduled MWP ISD School Board of Trustees meeting will be on July 25th at 6:30 p.m. at the school administration building. Air conditioning problems at hospital addressed at meeting. The story was written by Jan Crenfill. Air conditioning was the major topic at the Ward Memorial Hospital Board of Managers meeting last Thursday. According to Hospital Administrator Leticia Rodriguez, the Texas Department of Health requires air quality standards concerning temperature and humidity control for all hospitals, and Ward Memorial is not meeting those standards at the moment. Quote, "The dampers are not opening right now to allow the right amount of fresh air mix. Several companies have tried to work on the control of the air, but none have been able to completely solve the problem. They have improvised in the surgery room to get the humidity down by suctioning air out of the room to help maintain the correct level of humidity," she said. The most cost-efficient proposal to bring the hospital within standards was submitted by West Tech's Chillwater Specialist, LLC, out of Abilene. The proposal includes replacing the current compressor in the AC unit with the new microcontrol system, MCS, and handbell compressor, along with new controls for the unit, with a total price tag of $73,600. Quote, "This could be a short-term solution for getting air to sections we need to improve airflow to, and still last us maybe 5 years. It will be a new compressor unit and a new control panel," Rodriguez said. This particular solution to the hospital air cooling situation could be completed in about a month as compared to several months with any of the other air cooling proposals. As well as being much more cost-efficient and shorter turnaround time for completing the job, she said. Quote, "We will be much better off to keep the old machine, but with new guts," Rodriguez said. The motion was made and seconded to proceed with the proposal. The hospital managers discussed renewing a type of rent-to-buy option with Cardinal Health 200 LLC, located in Dublin, Ohio, to supply equipment for the hospital lab to use in diagnostic testing. In order to meet the requirements of this agreement, the hospital agrees to purchase a minimum amount of $25,000 per month of reagents, chemical compounds used to produce a test reaction, such as a pregnancy test changing colors when mixed with human urine. In exchange, Cardinal Health will supply diagnostic equipment to the hospital lab. The hospital currently spends approximately $28,000 per month on the purchase of the reagents, Rodriguez said. The contracts are for 60 months, and if the monthly minimum is met, then the hospital has the option to purchase the equipment being used for a fee of $1 at the end of the 60-month period. Quote, "This is a pretty good deal," Rodriguez said. The board agreed and voted to renew the contract with Cardinal Health. No citizens were present to address the board managers. All board managers, Frank Heslin, Angel Fuentes, Gerald Carlson, John Fawcett, Larry Hunt, Jeff Burdick, Lisa Stewart, and Administrator CEO Leticia Rodriguez were present for the meeting. The next regularly scheduled meeting will be June 23rd at 6:15 p.m. in the hospital boardroom at 420 South Ike Street. Hot Funds, Rezoning, Replat, Top Council. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Requests for hotel occupancy tax, hot monies, were one of the main topics of discussion during Tuesday's regularly scheduled meeting of the City of Monahan City Council. Presentations were heard from the Chamber of Commerce and Ward County requesting funding from the revenue. Chamber of Commerce Director Teresa Burnett told the council that her proposed budget was about the same as last year's budget, with the addition of funding for a new software program which is more conducive in coordinating events, advertising, and day-to-day operations of the chamber. The chamber requested approximately $177,000, which included money to partially offset administration expenses, as well as for advertising and support of events, bringing new events to town, and help grow the community. Ward County Judge Greg Holly told councilmen that the county did not want to compete with any other entity, but if funds were sufficient, they have requested $400,000 for the event center and $50,000 to help fund the Million Barrel Museum complex. Assistant City Manager Frank Heslin spoke to the council on behalf of the Sands Art Association and their building located at 1000 North Main. The building has a historical marker and was originally the Christ the King Catholic Church, built in 1938. In the mid-1960s, the Sands Art Association assumed the building for a place to hold art workshops, exhibits, and craft shows. Quote, "We're limited on what we can do with the building because it has a historical marker on the property. But if we can come up with some hot funds to complete some of the restorations in order to keep the building from falling down," Heslin said. Heslin said the roof on the building is the biggest problem, and possibly $40,000 with an additional $40,000 match would be enough to begin restoration. Burnett added comment to the Sands Art Building, saying, quote, "She had an architect from the Historical Commission come look at the building, and after reviewing the building, it was said the building's front wall is bowed, as well as having plumbing and electrical issues," end quote. City Manager Rex Thee stated that all of the requests would be taken under consideration and discussed during the budget workshop in August. Hot funds are around $150,000 above the budgeted amount for this year, Thee said. The balance of hot funds as of May 31st is $1.9 million. The next city council meeting will be held at 3 p.m. on Tuesday, June 28th, in the council chambers at City Hall, 112 West 2nd Street. Christ Closet receives sock donation from Bombas. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. It's hard to beat the appeal of a pair of new, clean, comfortable socks, and thanks to a big donation made to First Baptist Church Christ Closet, some local folks in need may soon be wearing new socks bearing the famous brand name Bombas. The generous donation came after an email sent to the Bombas Sock Company by FBC Secretary Desiree McAnally, explaining the need in Ward County. Bombas is known as the sock manufacturer that donates one pair of new socks for those in need for each pair it sells. Quote, "I was at home one night watching TV when the Bombas commercial came on, and I thought I'm going to reach out to them and see if they will donate some socks to the Christ Closet," McAnally said. McAnally went on to explain some time went by and she didn't hear anything from the company. Quote, "I just figured it wasn't going to happen. Then all of a sudden, one day in April, I got an email from the company saying they were sending us 250 pairs of socks. I was so excited," she said. After waiting around a month, the socks arrived early last Thursday morning. FBC pastor Dr. Chris Powell said, quote, "We were blessed that the Bombas Sock Company was willing to give back to our community," end quote. The Christ Closet gives gently used and new clothing, shoes, coats, and jackets to anyone who needs them. Quote, "There are no questions asked and no strings attached. If a family or individual is in need of clothes or shoes, they can get them here for free," McAnally said. "There are restrooms available with soap, razors, and towels so anyone can get cleaned up and is open on Mondays from 9 a.m. to noon. The church will take donations of new undergarments and socks in all sizes, as well as blankets, razors, hotel toiletries, purses, and backpacks. There was a huge need for men's clothing and shoes. Quote, "One of the most important things to remember is that we only put out items in like-new or slightly worn condition," she said, "because the intent from the very beginning is to give the families dignity," end quote. Volunteers sift through every donated item to make sure there aren't any with holes or stains. Items that can't be used at the Christ's Closet will be donated elsewhere or turned into other items. Quote, "We pack those up and take them to whoever wants them or can use them. If the clothes are too damaged, we will also turn them into rags for cleaning at the church. Nothing goes to waste," she added. The church also offers a hot meal to anyone on Wednesday nights, food boxes on the third Thursday of the month beginning at 8:30 a.m., which includes lots of fruits and vegetables, as well as an emergency food pantry. For more information, to volunteer or donate to the Christ Closet, call 432-943-4301. Madrid indicted on felony charges. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. The 143rd Ward County Grand Jury handed down two felony indictments in January for a Colorado City man on charges of evading arrest and vehicle theft. According to the indictment, John Madrid, aged 21, on February 21, 2021, did intentionally operate a 2009 Nissan Titan without the consent of owner Stanley Leon Helmers from the 2300 block of West 2nd Street in Thorntonville around 3 a.m., and on March 4, 2021, did intentionally flee from Ward County Sheriff Deputy Rodolfo Azuna while he was trying to place him under arrest or detain him. Quote, "The deputy was attempting to conduct a traffic stop on the vehicle Madrid was driving, and he ignored the overhead lights, and a pursuit ensued. Madrid was finally stopped around mile marker 103 after a 25-mile pursuit when Ector County Sheriff's Office deputies deployed spike strips," Ward County Sheriff Frerin Valle said. Madrid's bond was set at $20,000 for each indictment, and he remains in custody at the Ward County Jail in lieu of posting the $40,000 bond. The offense can be punishable by
imprisonment. Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.